Doors are often used as a metaphor for opportunities. When we have an open door, it's an opportunity that we have to walk through an open door. When an opportunity is gone or removed, we often say that that door is closed. Well, there are a lot of doors that we walk by, pass through, choose to close, or choose to open in life. And many of these doors lead to different things. There are doors to success, and there are doors to failure. Happiness, sadness, peace, tension, conflict, belief, and disbelief. In fact, the quality and direction of life is often influenced and shaped by the doors that we choose to walk through or to pass by or to close. The story of the first Easter is a story about an open door or a closed door to what we believe as followers of Jesus about Jesus. If what's recorded to have happened in the story of the first Easter actually happened, then the door to Jesus' claim about who he was and what he came to do is kicked wide open. If what is recorded to have happened in the story of the first Easter didn't happen, then what followers of Jesus believe about who he was and what he came to do comes crumbling down, and the door to what we believe is slammed shut. As we enter the story of the first Easter, Jesus has been arrested on Thursday and has been put to death on a cross at the behest of the Jewish religious leaders by the Roman government, and he has been placed in a tomb. And let's pick up the story on the third day. It says that early on Sunday, Mary, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb. Now, one of the first questions that you may ask is, who is this Mary lady? Well, Mary was someone who had her entire life changed as a result of meeting Jesus. And so Mary became a follower of Jesus. And she traveled with him, and she invested her time and energy to follow Jesus. And so she comes to the tomb on Sunday with some other women. And she comes to grieve, but she also comes to properly prepare Jesus' body for burial. When Jesus died on Friday, it was shortly before the start of the Jewish Sabbath. So his body was taken down, and it was hastily prepared for burial, with the understanding that when the Sabbath was over, they would come and they would take care of things fully as they needed to be for proper burial. When they come to the tomb on Sunday, everyone assumes that Jesus is going to do what dead people do. There is no question that he died on the cross. There is no question that he was dead when they placed him in the tomb. And there was no question in their mind that when they arrived at the tomb on Sunday, that Jesus would remain dead. But when Mary and the other women arrived at the tomb, things were not exactly as they expected them to be. And John, one of Jesus' closest followers, who is the one writing this account of his life, tells us how things were when they arrived at the tomb. It says, and they found that the stone had been rolled away from the entrance. It would not have been uncommon for a stone to be placed at the entrance of a tomb in the first century. It was common practice. But the Jewish religious leaders who had Jesus killed knew that he had predicted his resurrection, and they wanted to make sure that any potential hoax or any potential scam or any potential barrier that would stand in the way of everyone knowing that Jesus was dead and the resurrection didn't happen, they wanted to make sure that that was in place. So they had this tomb sealed with the seal of the Roman government, and they had Roman guards placed outside to make sure that no one could interfere with the burial of Jesus and the tomb where Jesus' body had been laid. So it tells us that Mary gets there, she sees this along with the other women, and She takes off. It says, John tells us that she ran and found Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved. Now, the one whom Jesus loved there is John. That John is translated as beloved. And so it is the one that Jesus loved. But notice that it says that Mary runs. Now, Mary doesn't run to find Peter and John because she thinks she has good news to share that Jesus has resurrected. In fact, she runs because she believes and assumes that something horrible has happened. And so she runs to find them, and then she tells them what she believes happens. It says, she said, "They have taken the Lord's body out of the tomb, and we don't know where they have put him." Now, we don't know who they are. Some scholars speculate that they're actually refers to Peter and John, and that the reason she went to Peter and John is because after the burial and after the Sabbath was over, that Jesus' followers would come to the tomb where Jesus was buried and move his body to a more permanent tomb, as the one he was placed in was temporary. And if the followers of Jesus had moved the body, Peter and John would definitely know. Another "they" possibility in the storyline is that the Jewish religious leaders had come and taken Jesus' body and put it in a criminal's grave, which is where they thought his body belonged. The reality is that we don't know who they are. But what we do know is that Mary believes they have taken his body and they don't know where to find him. It doesn't appear at this point that Mary and the other followers that were with her and the followers that she went and told the news to assumed that Jesus had resurrected. In fact, Luke's account of the same story tells us that the other followers didn't believe the women because what they said sounded like pure nonsense. The Mary and the others insist that Jesus' body is gone. And so they continue to make sure that their emphatic belief that the body is gone is understood by Peter and John and the other followers. And so Peter and John get to a point where they can't just sit around and do nothing anymore. And so John tells us, John tells us that they went to the tomb, and it says they were both running. So just as Mary and the women had run from the tomb, now Peter and John are running to the tomb. And they're not running to the tomb because they expect Jesus to be resurrected. They are running to the tomb because they have been told that Jesus' body has been taken, and they want to find out for themselves what is going on. So they were both running, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. So John reaches the tomb first, and there's some speculation about why John got there first. Some speculation says that John was younger, and as the result of being younger than Peter, he was in a little bit better shape and could run the distance a little better. Other speculation says that he was just faster. And then other speculation says that he was just a better runner. But the interesting thing is that focusing in on a detail like that kind of misses the point of what's actually happening in the story and what they discover at the tomb when they get there. It says that he, meaning John, who had gotten there first, stooped and looked in and saw the linen wrappings lying there. But he didn't go in. So when John gets there, he discovers that the wrappings that were wrapped around Jesus' body are laying there in the tomb. But it also says that he doesn't go in. And really at this point, there probably wasn't any reason to go in. He looked in, he saw the condition, he saw that what Mary and the other women had said was true, that Jesus' body was gone, the burial wrappings were there, there was no body in them. And so at this point, there was no reason to go in any further. But then John continues the story and says, then Simon Peter arrived and went inside. So Peter arrives at the tomb. He He goes inside, and it says he also noticed the linen wrappings lying there. While the cloth that had covered Jesus' head was folded up and lying apart from the other wrappings. This is an incredibly important detail, because if the Jewish religious leaders had come and taken Jesus' body, they would have taken the burial wrappings and the head cloth with them. If Jesus' followers had come and moved the body to a more permanent grave, they would not have unwrapped the body and put the taken the time to fold up the cloth and lay it next to the wrappings. But it was very clear that when they went in, they saw the burial wrappings there. There was no body, and someone had taken the time to fold the cloth and place it to the side. And the door to something more happening in the story begins to crack open for them. It says, then the disciple who had reached the tomb first also went in, and he saw and believed. We're not really sure what it is that John believes at this point, but the context and the flow of the passage kind of leads down the path that what John believes is that what Mary had told them was indeed true, that someone had taken the body. All he knew at that moment was that the body was gone and what Mary had said was true. And then John continues, for until then, they still hadn't understood the scriptures that said Jesus must rise from the dead. Now, Peter and John would have both been Jewish, and being so, they would have had at least some awareness of the Jewish scriptures, which had talked about the Messiah, who was one sent to redeem Israel and to restore Israel as a nation by God, and that the Messiah would have to suffer and die and would be raised from the dead. And they'd also spent time with Jesus, and they had heard Jesus predict his resurrection. But up until this point, they had not made the connection between what they understood as the Messiah, who Jesus had claimed to be, his death, and standing now in front of the empty tomb. And what they do next is very, very telling about what they believe and what they assume in this moment. And John says, then they went home. They didn't go looking for answers. They didn't go searching for anyone. They didn't barge into the Jewish religious leaders' council and demand answers. They didn't go ask questions of the Roman government. They just went home. They knew the body was gone. They knew that somebody had taken the body. They knew there was nothing else for them to do to hang around there, so they simply went home. But it wouldn't be long before all of that would begin to change, because later that same day, John tells us, that Sunday evening, the disciples were meeting behind locked doors. Now notice that they weren't meeting behind just closed doors. They were meeting behind locked doors. And then John tells us why. He says, because they were afraid of the Jewish leaders. They had seen what the Jewish leaders had done to Jesus. They had seen how they had tortured Jesus. They had seen how they had opposed Jesus so adamantly. And they were afraid that as followers of Jesus, they were going to do the same to them. So they met behind closed doors. When all of a sudden, everything changed. And the door to believing about Jesus and who he was kicked wide open. It says they were afraid of the Jewish leaders, but then suddenly Jesus was standing there among them. Peace be with you, he said. As they look around, there is no question that this is the same person. This is no question that this is Jesus whom they had seen tortured on Thursday, crucified on Friday, and placed in a tomb. This is no question that this is the Jesus whose body is missing from the tomb. And he is standing among them. And not only is he standing among them, but he is talking to them. He is telling them to be at peace. He is giving them a greeting of friendliness, a greeting of relationship, a greeting of connection. And he says, peace be with you. And then it says, and as he spoke, he showed them the wounds in his hands and his side. There was no doubt that the wounds in his hands were the very wounds that had been inflicted by the Roman soldiers when they nailed Jesus to the cross. And there was no doubt that the wound in his side was the wound from the spear of a Roman soldier to make sure that Jesus was indeed dead. The door to belief began to kick wide open. And John tells us they were filled with joy when they saw the Lord. The story of the first Easter, either Jesus was standing there among them or he wasn't. Either he was no longer in the grave or he wasn't. Either Jesus had resurrected or he hadn't. And they were filled with joy because their belief in Jesus and who he was and what he came to do had been rekindled. But that's not the end of the story. There's more to come. If you've ever thought that the story of the resurrection was nonsense or didn't make sense, or if you've ever thought that Jesus was just a really cool guy that taught some interesting stuff that could potentially make life better, then you're not all that different from his first followers. In fact, on the story of the first Easter, none of his followers believed until they saw for themselves. And it was only when they saw for themselves that the door to belief began to crack open. And that wasn't even the case for all of them. Not all of them were ready to believe. Now, this was the case for one in particular who had his doubts. And John tells us that one of the disciples, Thomas, nicknamed the twin, was not with the others when Jesus came. And we don't know why Thomas wasn't there. Maybe he had some kind of family commitment, or maybe he had some type of work obligation, or maybe he was so grief-stricken over Jesus' death that he just couldn't be at that meeting. Or maybe he had completely given up hope and moved from hope to disbelief altogether. We don't know. What we do know is that Thomas was skeptical. In fact, he was so skeptical that he refused to believe, even when others had told him. And here's what John says. He says, they, and this time we know who they is. They are the other 10, the other followers of Jesus. And it says, they told him, we have seen the Lord. But he replied, I won't believe it unless I see the nail wounds in his hands, put my fingers into them, and place my hand into the wound of his side. 10 of Thomas's closest friends had told him they had seen Jesus. 10 of Thomas's closest friends had said they had heard Jesus. Mary and the other women had told Thomas they had seen and heard Jesus. But Thomas refused to believe, because there was an unless that hung over Thomas's belief. And there has been an unless that has hung over the belief of people throughout history. And for some of us today, there may be an unless that continues to hang over what we believe about who Jesus is and what Jesus came to do. And the story of the first Easter, and whether it really happened or it didn't happen. Thomas's unless actually opens the door to show that even the most skeptical can believe. John continues the story by saying, 8 days later, the disciples were together again, and this time Thomas was with them. The doors were locked. So again, they're meeting behind locked doors. It's for the same reason. They're still afraid of the Jewish religious leaders. It says, but suddenly, as before, So like it was 8 days earlier when Thomas wasn't with them, Jesus was standing among them. "Peace be with you," he said. So 8 days earlier, Jesus had not been bound by the locked and the closed door. And in this instance, he once again wasn't locked, bound by the locked and closed door. We don't know how he got in, but worrying about how he got in is another one of those details that kind of misses the point. Because again, Jesus is standing right there with him. The same Jesus who had been crucified and placed in the tomb was now standing with them and talking with them. And then he turns his attention directly to Thomas. And he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and look at my hands. Put your hand into the wound in my side." Now we don't know if Thomas took him up on his offer, but we know that Jesus said, "Don't be faithless any longer. Believe." It's possible that Thomas walked over and put his hand in the nail wound and in the side wound. We just don't know. But what we do know is how Thomas responded when he said, "My Lord and my God," Thomas explained. We know that Thomas moved from a closed door of disbelief to an open door of belief in the resurrection. And then Jesus says to him, then Jesus told him, "You believe because you have seen me. Blessed are those who believe without seeing me." Jesus says, "You believe because you've seen me." He had gone to Thomas and said, "You won't believe unless you touch the wounds in my hand. Here they are. You won't believe unless you touch the wound in my side. Here it is." And he says to Thomas very clearly, "Unless my influence and shape what you believe, but unless does not have to determine what you believe. You have seen for yourself, but others can believe without having seen for themselves because you have seen for yourself. And unless no longer has to stand in the way." The story of the first Easter reframed all of life for the first century followers of Jesus. And it has continued to reframe life for people throughout history. The invitation of the story of the first Easter is to allow what really happened to reframe life for people like you, for people like me, maybe even for you and me. The invitation of the first Easter isn't to lock ourselves behind some closed door, but to allow what Jesus did, which was to be sent by God to redeem sin and to restore relationship with God, to change everything for us as it did for the first century followers of Jesus. The story of the first Easter is an invitation to believe. Let me pray for you this morning. Dear God, thank you for today, for this time together. Thank you for this story, which is indeed the greatest story ever told. A story of your great love, a story of your immeasurable grace, extended to people who need to simply believe. Pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen.